This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
Oh, you do?
The Mark Reardon Show.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give. Sometimes I found myself hurting from giving too much.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Oh, yeah, we are on location for Fish Fry Fridays, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo!
Yeah, smattering of applause. Well, the deal is here we are at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church, which is near Soulard, and we don't have the room quite packed yet, but these things fill up very, very quickly. We're going to do the roundtable live, and you're welcome to come out because the room is open right now. We're going to be here until 6 o'clock, and I think the audience will notify, or not notify, but they'll notice that the crowd noise builds. We get to a point, Jane, as you've been here for very many, in the 5 o'clock hour, we can't hear ourselves talk, right?
Absolutely.
But you guys got to do me a favor today. All you on the roundtable, I'm going to introduce the panel, get real close to those microphones, even more important than when you're in the studio. Jane is here. She's going to hang with us this afternoon.
Woo!
Be careful. The headphones are still not adjusted here.
Oh, turn Mark's up.
Yeah. Jean Evans, political consultant for Go Consulting, former executive director of the state GOP, and she was a state rep as well, and she heads the Missouri Federation for Children. Jean, your resume here is so long, I don't have time to introduce Steve Butts, who's just a simple man.
He doesn't even talk about my resume anymore.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot of the things that are happening nationally. There's a very interesting story that just cleared in the New York Times about a cabinet meeting that happened yesterday with President Trump, cabinet members, and Elon Musk that did not go really smoothly. But we'll pass that along here in due time as we move through the roundtable. All right, let's start, unfortunately, with crime in St. Louis. We're going to talk about the mayor's race, the comptroller's race. But we had a shooting in broad daylight today, Jane,
yes,
right?
Yes, we did. Right at the Walgreens on Lindell Boulevard, right near SLU. When I was in law school, we would walk down there all the time.
What happened? Do we know at this
point?
There
was an argument, and then they pulled out guns.
Three people are shot. One, it was supposedly at least reported in the news. The woman was the shooter. The police apprehended her pretty quickly just off Lindell. But, broad daylight.
She was trying to break up the fight and then started shooting people.
Started shooting.
Well, that's just one of the stories that we talk about on a regular basis downtown, and unfortunately it happens too much in broad daylight. But, Steve, let me start with you in the legislature. There was action this week on the bill for state control. This is something that Jane has been shepherding through, and we'll let her have her say
years.
In a moment. Right. But this thing is looking like it's closer to Governor Kehoe's desk.
That's right. I got to get my 2 cents in before Jane gets her 25 cents in.
That's right, baby.
No, no. So I've long been in support of it, and I said it's a bitter pill for those of us in the city of St. Louis. I wish we didn't have to go down this road, but I just think it is the best interest of the citizens of St. Louis and the region as a whole that we go back to a board of police commissioners appointed by the governor. And I say that based upon not just anecdotal, but factual evidence. The actual police officers that serve say, hey, it just worked better. It's not directly related to crime stats, but it has everything to do with the management of the department. It's like having a board of directors, and we need more input, and I just hope to God that the people that Governor Kehoe is going to pick, because this is going to happen, do their job, come with a level of competency, come with an expertise, and we're putting a lot of hope and trust in this governor to do that.
So, Jane, explain where we are with the process without getting too far into the weeds where we lose people, because...
Well, the big hurdle has always been getting through the Senate, right? Because they can filibuster, and Carla May has been filibustering. She's the primary opponent. And so we got the bill perfected, meaning it can't be changed, and there can be no more filibustering. There's going to be one more vote up or down in the Senate, and then there will be one vote in the House up or down.
And that's it.
And that's it. Yeah. And then the governor, I mean, the governor's like, if you get this to me next week, I will sign it. So,
and then how quickly would a commission be put together? What's the realistic timetable for something
like
that?
Well, it's required by August.
For a normal bill, it's like August 28th. We could have an emergency clause, which pushes that up. I don't know that an emergency clause
would it won't change the time frame that the board would be convened.
Oh, correct.
It would just make the bill law.
August 28th is the real answer.
And Gene, they negotiated. They sat down. The Democrats sat down. They got some good concessions,
did.
I'm not, you know, I was glad they finally said, okay, let's actually talk about the bill. Because for the last 4 years, there's been no discussion as to why, what, where. It just was a no. Now it was to the point where they're like, okay, let's negotiate some things.
But how did some of the stuff get worked out? When we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, there was an amendment. Steve, when I was at the Capitol, we were talking to Nick Shore about this. There was some thought about giving the ability for people on the commission to live in the county because they might own a business in the city. Where did that go anywhere?
It did not fully.
No, it did not fully. It's partially there. You have to have a business in the city, and you have to live within so many miles, I think, from the city border.
But that's a non-voting member, right?
Non-voting
member. So that's why I said it did not really.
Oh, okay.
Right. If you're a non-voting member,
correct,
and there's five votes and you're number six.
Right.
So what's the point of having the non-voting member?
Well, to offer some business experience of people in the county. Because, look,
I be the second non-voting member?
Yes, you can. Possible? I'll be third.
Okay,
But, I mean, look, crime in the city of St. Louis affects us all. We have figured out that the crime migrates, and it is affecting the entire region. Crime is exploding in St. Louis County. Okay, it's migrating. And if we don't get a handle on this, it's not just a city issue. It's a regional issue, and frankly, it's a state issue because, I mean, basically, the St. Louis region is the biggest part of, you know,
absolutely,
the GDP of the state of Missouri. So, the cops were literally speechless and with joy when this passed. I mean,
it's not really, and they keep saying state control, but
it's
the
not.
People that are
citizen
board, they're from the city. But there are a lot of people who work in the city who don't pay taxes. They pay taxes on the earning tax, but they don't live in the city. So I think it's good that you have some representation of a business owner.
Just to hear the perspective.
Right.
Because there's a lot of them. You know, county residents pay the bulk of the earnings tax. And it's not a bad idea to listen to what they have to say. And
What types of things will this commission be able to rule on and
everything.
Handle? Everything. Even hiring the chief.
Yes.
Think of it as a board of directors.
Okay.
Just like they do in the county. The county does that. And here's the thing. I was in the governor's office when we had board control of the police department in the city. And everyone's like, oh, you know, the governor's going to run it. Look, the governor has a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing in life is to get a good appointee on a board and never hear again. Right?
Like, right.
And that it's running well, so you don't hear about it. You don't, you know. So this idea that the governor is interested in micromanaging this department could not be further from the truth. What they want is they want it to be functioning. It was just like appointing the Gabe Gore, the prosecuting attorney.
Right, right.
You appoint the guy and you never have to deal with it again. That's what the governor and, you know, that's what everybody wants.
That's Jane Duker. Stay up. Steve Butts is on the panel. Gene Evans as well. So let's, Steve, get to the mayor's race. And the comptroller's race is interesting, too. But let's start with Kara Spencer and Tashara. They both clear to the next round, which is on April 8th. What do you think of the numbers? I mean, there was some hope that maybe Tashara wouldn't finish in the top two. Michael Butler doesn't quite get there.
Yeah, I never thought that was realistic. I just felt strongly. I mean, there was no way that Mayor Jones was not going to finish in the top two. For me personally, and I think for the future of the city, the four candidates that came out, all four that for once that I was supporting, they won. So that was Kara Spencer, Donna Behringer, Shane Cohn, and Laura Keyes. They all had a good night. It was an exceptionally good night for Kara Spencer, because that is an overwhelming statement. And she closed the gap in areas that the mayor had won 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And just ran the table in other parts of the city.
I agree.
Not just deep South St. Louis. That's something they want to spin. That is not true.
She got 35%
in North St. Louis.
I mean, Mayor Slay could never get close to that number. I mean, you get 20% up there and you're cheering. I mean,
in the runoffs, because I work in elections in other states, and when you have these primaries where an incumbent finishes second, they almost never win. And to have that big of a gap, I mean, it's going to be tough. But I would say the same thing for Donna, who, you know, Donna is not going to be outworked. We all know Donna Behringer. I served with her. I've worked with her for years. But for her to do as well as she did with
that was the surprise
almost
to me.
No money. And what a lot of people don't realize, you know, she has said this, that's a really important role. So if the city of St. Louis is not mayor centric, like there are three people who decide kind of the money's going to spend, and she would be one of them. So that would be a huge.
To have Kara and Donna Behringer on the board of ENA, which is the sort of the central group here with the budget and contracting and everything that's important. That would be good to put Megan Green as the.
It was interesting. Look, Donna was here on the roundtable a week ago. She was very confident, but politicians are always confident. So I'm going to win. I'm going to win.
So you just say you're confident, but you don't feel confident.
As an outsider and not an expert on city politics, I didn't think she was going to win. So it was significant that she beats an incumbent that really hasn't had anyone challenge her since 1995. But what really resonated with me is that as Donna's been on the show the last couple of months, she is always, whether it's during breaks or on the air, talking about the people that she's knocking on the doors with, and they want change. And that was not surprising.
She's a hard worker. And
people want change.
That's right. And that's the thing. They want change. And I thought that Darlene probably wouldn't get swept up into that, but I do believe she is.
She's a serious person, too. She's just not out there screaming about hating Donald Trump. She's talking about real solutions because she's a serious person. She was a serious lawmaker. She probably passed more legislation than a lot of Republicans, which is hard to do when you're in the minority party. Right. So she's a serious, again, she's a Democrat. We voted differently on a lot of things, but I've worked with her. She is a hard worker.
Honest.
Yeah.
Let's make competence great again.
Yeah.
Let's do and you know, it's great that she has a background.
Thank you.
as an alderman.
Right.
Background
She knows the city.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
She has relationships with
bring
the state.
A lot to it.
Went to Parkway West. That's a big plus.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
There you go.
Say that.
Longhorn.
But let's talk about Tish and Kara Spencer and what's gonna happen here with that race. Because clearly, you know, one of the things they said this morning in the Post, I guess there was 10,000 fewer people that voted in this election than who did in March of 2021. That's just sad.
It really is sad.
So what happens between now and the 8th? Will this have a pretty high-profile focus, a lot of money pouring in, and will we see exposure throughout the region about this mayor's race?
Well, if money has anything to do with running races, and it does, you know, for better or for worse, I mean, you got to believe that for the mayor to attract new money is going to be very difficult with the showing. That's not going to happen.
She's not going to get money.
And I think that Kara Spencer will attract more money. She'll get her message out. This whole
She's
thing about
up on
voting, the voting thing, I can't explain it, Mark. You know, we went to early voting. I thought that was going to be important. The any polling, location voting.
It does help.
But it really hasn't moved the needle much.
Everybody wants to be with the winner, and it's hard to go against an incumbent when they're in office. But now that it looks like she's going to win, and it looks like Donna's going to win, you're going to see this money coming in because people want to be with the winner before they win.
And I think people want change.
They do.
And here's the thing. The poll that was done on this race, the only really, like, poll toward the very end basically said there were 63% of people who were not going to vote for Tashara. Well, that's sort of happened.
And it did happen. That poll was accurate.
It was accurate.
I mean, I think
Kara overperformed, but, you know, the mayor has nowhere to grow. Kara still has room to grow. I mean, so I think that it could get worse.
Are you disappointed you didn't get in that race, Steve Butts?
No, I'm not disappointed.
But you were going to if Kara Spencer wasn't there. You were thinking about it hard, though, right?
A year ago, I thought about it a little.
Yeah, okay.
I'm glad I did not.
That's Steve Butts.
He's going to be our
senator. Gene Evans on the panel. Jane Duker will take our first break here. We are live on Fish Fry Fridays. It's Fish Fest at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church near Sular. Come see us this afternoon. The fish is a frying right now. Segment number two of the Roundtable on a Friday is coming up next.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are live in Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church. It is the fish fest that they have over here. They've been doing it since 2017. It's going to be fantastic. The bar is open. If you'd like to swing by, you can certainly come by early. We're going to be here until 6 o'clock. I still think the birthday girl, my daughter turns 10 years old tomorrow. She might swing by for a happy birthday visit, but we'll have to see. Sue and Fred, though, are here, and we're going to hang out in the 4 o'clock hour with Jane and all the regular stuff. We got Cusimano, Paul Hall, and entertainment. We're going to have Dave Murray, too. You guys looked at the forecast. 80 degrees next week, one day next week. Unbelievable.
I am so for it.
So Jane Duker is here, State Rep Steve Butch, Gene Evans, political consultant and the head of the Missouri Federation for Children. So there's an interesting story. Let's kind of get to some national stuff today, and we'll run the gamut because there's a lot going on. Marco Rubio yanked visas for foreign students at Columbia University. But the New York Times has this story, and it just cleared a short time ago. If I can get it to come up here on the old iPad, I'm going to read part of this to you because it was apparently an explosive cabinet meeting yesterday. Now, mind you, this is the New York Times, so we'll have to say that there's a little question mark about the accuracy of the reporting always. But it says this: Marco Rubio was incensed. Here he was in the cabinet room of the White House, the Secretary of State, seated beside the president and listening to the litany of attacks from the richest man in the world. Seated diagonally opposite across the mahogany table, Elon Musk was letting Mr. Rubio have it, accusing him of failing to slash his staff. So apparently, according to this reporting, Musk says to Rubio, "You have fired nobody." And then says that perhaps the only person he had fired was a staff member from Mr. Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. Rubio did not take well to that. They went back and forth. There were other members of the cabinet that certainly kept quiet. But this went on, according to the New York Times, for an uncomfortable amount of time. And Mr. Trump finally intervened to defend Marco Rubio, not Elon Musk. So a lot of people have said that this relationship might not last too long. But we're already seeing, and Gene, I'll start with you, we're seeing some peeling back of some of the DOGE efforts. There seemingly is a little consternation in the room. You got a lot of big egos. But here's what I would say. I think this is good. Let's have the cabinet members that are in charge of these positions. I know that there's some concern about veteran affairs in particular, right, with cutbacks. Let's have them make the case. Let's see what the president's going to rule. And Elon Musk, if he needs to be dialed back a little bit, then we dial him back a little bit. So the only regret I have is that I wish this one was on full display like Zelensky last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to have, you know, heated discussions. I think it's good to have cabinet meetings. I don't think the last administration was actually having cabinet meetings, according to reporting. So it's good to get these folks in a room, have them hash it out. I you know, there are certainly places to cut, and that's a big job, but now that the cabinet members are in place, they might not like having their staffs cut. So there's going to be some consternation because there's a lot of cuts going around, and some folks, or they might want to have some say in who's, you know, who's coming or going. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's good that they're having these discussions.
Yeah, and Steve, the article is actually interesting because apparently the president tried to offer each side something by praising Musk and the cabinet secretaries, but he did make it clear at the end that he supported the mission of DOGE, but he said that it needs to be more refined. He said that the secretaries would be in charge. The Musk team would only advise. And here's the most significant part of the reporting, in my mind. He actually uses the words, moving forward, we're going to use a scalpel, and we're not going to just try to burn the whole place down. So that was something that people maybe said going in, but there is an indication that some of this is going to slow down a little bit.
I can't agree with that more, because the last thing we need, in my opinion, was the stupid theater of Musk with the stupid chainsaw. I'm like, you know, that is no way to run any business. business. You want to be efficient in a business, then you find out what are the essential services. Is there some waste? Do we have too many people here, not enough people there? The guys that are men and women that are the cabinet secretaries, they've been in charge of their departments like 8 weeks. And they have thousands and tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands.
Big staffs.
Huge staffs and huge budgets. How anybody can expect, if you want a serious person in charge, and we need serious people in charge, you have to give them some time to analyze where the needs are, and a scalpel and a slow, steady, thoughtful process, not this throwing stuff into chaos. Because whether it's the financial markets or our own personal lives, people don't want to live. Some people obviously love the chaos, but I think the chaos is going to get old, and we want adults in the room running their departments properly and efficiently.
But it seems like, according to this story, that Trump is realizing that right now.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I think the big splash, okay, that's fine. I mean, that's politics, it's PR, that's fine. Now we're getting down to brass tacks. So much of what he has done has been reversed, and you start to look a little goofy when you're reversing as much as you're doing. So I think he's sort of figured out that, you know, the measured approach is better. I mean, he wouldn't act like that in his own company. I don't know why he would act like that as president. So you got to, you know what? Every government has fat. I know it. Of course. I mean, I worked for a governor that cut more out of the Missouri budget than any other governor
in
history.
There's no way any business that Trump ran ever had this many people not working or even showing up and clocking in or going
maybe,
to the office.
Maybe. But regardless, I mean, he wouldn't take an axe. I mean, and so he did have financially challenging times. I know we forget that he did go bankrupt. And so, right. So things were not always as rosy as they are now. And so, but you can cut all the fat out of government, and you should always do it. And I don't agree with Democrats who are against that. That's dumb. And I also have the Mel Robbins philosophy, let them. Okay. This idea that we're going to like scream in anticipation. Okay. I get it, but just, you know, let it play out and then approach this from, you know, a position of actual consequences for behavior. I mean, I, this idea of crying wolf a lot, I think you lose the American people when you do that.
So you wouldn't have had one of those paddles up?
No.
I would not. I thought that horrible. Just looked silly to me. Horrible. We're going to have midterms here inside of a year.
Right.
It'll be here before we can think about
and
it.
And that video.
If they
is
do poorly,
real?
The,
we'll do
the
it.
Video is real. But here's what's funny about the
oh
video.
My
so
God.
This is a video where several members of Congress, including AOC, are dancing
women
up and down. And it's, but yeah, it
whose
is women.
Idea was that?
But Jane, honest to God, when you watch that video.
No, it's so cringe.
No, wait. If you look at it, there's an African-American representative that's in the middle of it, and I swear to God, I thought it was Wesley Bell. Then I realized it was all women. But look at the haircut and the glasses.
Okay.
It looks like Wesley Bell. I'm just telling you right now. Steve, you look like you're suspicious. See the video.
I'll watch the video.
No, the video is brutal. And I'm like, this has got to be a joke, right? Like,
it did look like a joke.
Well, I mean, I think it was humiliating toward the women. I'm like, what were you thinking?
And that, I mean, I would say the same thing. Let them. I mean,
right,
this behavior on that side of the aisle, we don't see it.
Yes, we do.
To the Democrats in the, I'm talking about the Democrats in the state house. I have not seen that kind of ridiculous
behavior. The Republicans did it.
Well, she's kind of got you there.
Yeah, the Republicans, yeah.
Did what?
They screamed out in the middle of the state at the state. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I'm
that
talking
did
about like right now. I don't see Democrats in Jeff City. I'm there every day.
No.
Acting
a fool.
Ridiculous.
No, I'm proud of
no.
our caucus.
Yes, absolutely.
If
they don't.
Kudos
and I'm glad.
If we have to push
and I didn't
back,
like it
back.
When Marjorie Taylor Greene did it against Obama. I didn't like it when the Republicans did it against Bob Holden. I didn't like, you know, it's nonsense. Okay. It demeans the office. It makes your government look like a joke. And so stop doing it. You're not making any points. You're not winning anyone over by being rude and
low rent.
Well,
and not standing for some of the people who were recognized. I mean, it was really, you know, one of the things that was going on during the campaign was like, you know, Republicans are weird and we're the normal party. Well, they don't look, that's not normal behavior. A child with cancer who stands up, who's surviving cancer, that you can't stand and recognize that, or families who've lost loved ones, like, that's not normal.
Newsflash, people who have to say they're normal usually aren't.
But Gene, you know what's interesting, and you guys, you know, I don't know how Steve and Jane responded to this, but there's a fair amount of criticism certainly on them with the paddles and looking goofy. There's a fair amount on the other side that think that they should have gone further, that they should have all walked out when Al Green got up there. And I'm driving in today on 44, and I see the red Solo cups on one of the passovers that resist. Well, I don't know what you're resisting, but people want to resist. But that's what a lot of Democrats want to push.
They didn't get the memo.
Democrats, correct. You want to keep losing elections, go down that road.
Get the memo. Protesting, okay, protesting's great, but it has to at some point convert into policy and change. And just screaming for the sake of screaming, people, I think people are really getting done with it. I think they're done. They're like, we want to get back to basics. We want people to govern. I think that this is a real opportunity to be more bipartisan and to be more collaborative. I think people are starting to get to the point where collaboration is worth it rather than just protesting.
Trump, some of these issues, the women in sports, that's an 80-20 issue. And not one Democrat voted for it.
Here's a CNN poll on that. 79% oppose, allow 18%. That's on CNN.
And I mean, really, the if I can't believe I'm saying this.
Why are we never talking about it?
But John Fetterman is probably the ring bearer for normal dudes in your
But he didn't even vote for that.
No. No, but he actually, I mean, in his defense, he believes it. I mean, I'm probably a more of a Fetterman Democrat. But, I mean, he has a couple positions that, like, maybe I don't agree with, but I'm like, hey, he's the guy.
He acts like somebody you would want to hang out with. Like, he seems like somebody that has, I hate to use that word again, normal, but he just seems like a regular dude.
He's not insecure. I can work with the other side and not be insecure about it.
I can have a beer with Fetterman. I can wear a hoodie with Fetterman. But it was not a bad choice. Look, I understand why the Democrats picked Elise Slotkin the other
night. She did a nice job.
I thought her rebuttal to the speech was great.
She looks like a Midwest mom because she is. You got guys like Andy Beshear and Josh Shapiro and Elise Slotkin who might be. But then this is all framed around Gavin Newsom all of a sudden saying things that we've been saying on women's sports for years. All of a sudden, he's on a conservative podcast and goes, yeah, you know, that is an issue of fairness. Where the hell did that guy come? Now, he's about as sleazy as they come, and he's going to go back and forth. But if that doesn't indicate that someone, you know, changing everything just to run for president, I don't know what does.
He's running. When they need a leader, I mean, you know, you have to have a leader for your party.
Who is the leader, guys? Seriously.
Right
of
now?
Of the Democrats.
Gavin Newsom.
Yeah. Gavin Newsom. Is he? Yeah, maybe.
It feels kind of rudderless to me.
I think rudderless might be more accurate.
Who's the leader of the party at a national level? It's Gavin Newsom.
You see Pritzker trying to be the leader, and then some, you know, AOC, and this Jasmine Crockett, who's from St. Louis.
Not the leader.
What do you know about her, Jane? Because she went to MICDS, right?
Well, what's funny about that is she kind of does the whole, like, I'm from the streets kind of thing.
She's got a southern accent, though.
Right. But she went to MICDS, and then I think her college was like, I mean, it was like, you know, $80,000 a year. I mean, look.
Yeah.
Like, that bugs me. It seems all inauthentic.
Inauthentic.
I think people sense
it. A politician being inauthentic?
No way. I think people are actually getting sick of it.
Authenticity is really important right now. And if you try to be something you're not, it doesn't work.
I think people sense it, whether they verbalize it or not. And so I get that she wants to be, you know, flashy and she wants to, you know, make a splash. But if it doesn't get you any results, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To what end?
It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Jane Duker, Steve Butts, Gene Evans, all here. You know, the situation, one of the things that I was talking about this week were the tariffs. And I've certainly supported President Trump on most of these issues. And I don't even mind some of the chaos, because I think some of the chaos is going to lead to good things. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll repair what's been, you know, harmed, where we should turn the spigots back on. And some of that's happening right now. But having said that, I think you have a situation with Canada. I had a great conversation with Joe Warmington, who's a columnist for the Toronto Sun. This is a guy who supports Trump pretty much in everything from up there. But he didn't like the tariffs at all. He was very sad when I talked to him. I had a farmer on from Charkio, Missouri the other day, Blake Hurst, who is a big voice in Missouri for agriculture. Mm-hmm. And he's very concerned about the tariffs. Now, that has been one of those things that's been paused, at least temporarily. And there's not as much pain that's being inflicted. But when it comes to the tariffs, Gene, I'm not sure what the strategy is there. I think a lot of people say, okay, let him do what he's doing. He's negotiating. But there are some economic concerns there, and the markets have not reacted. I think you even referenced that earlier well to that.
No, they haven't. But, you know, tariffs are something that can be used, but they have to be used very judiciously and carefully. And most people don't understand how they work. And if you... Right now, what's causing the problem is uncertainty. The markets don't like uncertainty. And so they don't know but that's, you know, Donald Trump's sort of superpower is nobody knows what he's going to do. So it works for him. But this uncertainty about if tariffs are going to be there, where they're going to be, how much they're going to be, what products are going to be on, does cause problems in the market because people want to know, like they want that certainty. But I don't see him pulling back from the lack of certainty. He's using it as a tool that he really believes can make this country greater and have more money. So I think that uncertainty is going to continue. And I just don't see any way around it.
Okay, the uncertainty, let's put that aside. You just tell me this, that I will never understand this. All right, the guy loves tariffs. We knew that going into the election.
Yes, he was very
clear.
So
we can't be wrong on that. But how we need friends, good friends in the world, and Canada is a great friend of the United States, as is Great Britain. I'm just like, we need these trading partners. How we can have tougher tariffs against Canada and Mexico than we do China, You explain that to me. I cannot understand it.
Listen,
I see China as a trade threat. I do not see
these
Canada.
Countries have these rich social programs because we pay to defend them. We've spent so much money on defense, and these countries take advantage of that, and then they pour that money.
That's not what this fight's about.
It's
Canada.
Not what this fight is
That's
about.
That's not what this.
Well, not with Canada for
NATO.
Sure.
No, it's not.
We're just talking Canada right.
Right.
Now.
And that
is ridiculous. Why
pick there?
I don't understand the Canada thing because, look, I get focusing on fentanyl from Mexico in particular, but with Canada, and I know that there are people that make the claims, but it just falls flat to
exactly
me. That doesn't
right.
seem
There's
the motivating factor.
I mean, and yet
partner.
China, we have not had a single conversation about the trade deficit with China.
Well, to our knowledge, I don't know what's going on there, but
I mean, he's not threatening. Here's the thing. You know, I'm all for, like, using leverage, but, boy, when you come out the box that hot, What tools are you leaving, you know?
Don't we have, wait, more trade with Mexico and Canada than we do with China?
I don't know, but they're, I agree with Steve, they're more of a threat. I don't think Mexico or Canada are going to tube our economy. I do think
that
China
could. They want to work together with us.
Right. So, I'd like us to focus on the people that could actually hurt us. And I think, you know, if you threaten it and then you back off all the time, I mean, eventually that dance is going to get old.
The tariff situation is very complicated. And I'm not going to try to act like I know all of it because there are some things that will help maybe American producers and farmers, but there are other things that will hurt maybe even a broader economy. We're going to take a break. Hang on. We're live here at Fish Fest this afternoon from Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church. They're going to serve the food in just a little bit, but we got some people gathered in the room. The bar is open. And hey, how many fish fries on a Friday have the Grateful Dead playing on a video? Because they do here. We're live until 6 o'clock. Come by. When I hear Ethan in the studio say, "Quiet down, Jane."
Oh, sorry.
I like the authority there. You didn't have the headphones on. We are live at Holy Trinity Syrian Orthodox Church. It is Fish Fry Fridays on the Mark Reardon Show. The aforementioned Jane Duker is here, and she's going to hang out for a little bit after 4 o'clock. Gene Evans on the panel today, and State Rep Steve Butts as well. Do you guys, who does the grocery shopping on the table? Because I don't. We talk about Fred every once in a while, Sue. Fred doesn't do the
Instant
grocery
cart.
Shopping, does he?
No, he does.
Oh, he does? Okay.
Instant cart.
But do you go to the store, Jane? But you do the shopping, right? Steve,
yeah.
How about your
yes.
hustle? Do you go to the store?
Angie does the shopping,
Uh-oh.
And she's a Schnucks and Aldi's girl.
Okay.
There you go.
Gene, how about you?
I do all the shopping.
Okay, so I do the shopping for the most part. Like, my wife likes the Instacart stuff. I like to go get my hands. But I have not seen this myself here in St. Louis. But my friend Rick Niner in Las Vegas sends me a picture from his real expensive grocery store, which, by the way, a dozen eggs is $8, not two dozen or not 18. But there were eggs that were missing from the carton.
Oh, my
gosh.
So
people are now stealing individual eggs. So how long is it before we go to the damn Walmart or the Schnucks and they got that behind the locks?
Oh, right.
Because everything else is behind the locks,
That's
right?
Scary.
Wow.
I'm
probably
just
not because they'll crack in your pocket.
People will do anything. It's really unbelievable. I don't know. No, I kind of bitched about the fact that Schnucks did this thing where you can't go through with too many items when you automatically check out. And I think what was happening is people were walking out the door with it. Walmart lets people check out. You know that people are walking out the door with items. They kind of build it into their pricing. They're big enough where they can do that. But some of this stuff on the grocery prices, now, Jane, there's going to be some pressure on Trump, not on the egg front, because that's a bird flu thing. But listen to this. This is interesting from our own neighborhood here in St. Louis. There was some reporting today that I saw that researchers at a lab at WashU were doing some really good work on detecting the airborne bird flu in under 5 minutes, which is having sensors that would indicate that, I think, is a big deal. And it's very complicated. But what they need to do, this is what Blake Hurst told me earlier this week. Did you know that they have to shoot every chicken with a shot? Like, individually, they have to give these. It makes sense because that's how we get the shots. So they're looking at something that potentially could be in the feed where they have a different way to get
be better.
Right. But I mean,
if
this is not taken care of, I mean, these egg prices are crazy right now. They really are.
And so let me ask a dumb question. But if they have bird flu, like you can't eat the chicken, right? Can you?
They destroy the chickens.
They're done. So chicken prices are going to go up.
We can hurry up and, well, those aren't the ones that we eat because, anyway.
That's why I was asking.
I'm amazed they can redo the whole flock in a short amount of time. That goes to show you how many
chickens
ag
are, too. Right.
Reacts.
Wow. Well, but I mean, you know, they promised, better prices.
Okay, well,
we need to see it.
There is going to be a point where people are going to say, hey, wait a second. You know, we want the economy to cool off just a little bit.
Well, people are finding other... They're going without eggs. Yeah, they're upcharging eggs at some of the restaurants.
At restaurants.
Yeah.
I know. I like eggs. It makes me sad.
Let's talk about daylight saving time, okay?
Almost daylight saving time.
That's right. This Sunday morning, we spring forward. Here's what, because now there's been discussion in Congress about doing something about this so we don't go back and forth. But people have different feelings on what might be the best place to land. In other words, should we stay here right now or should we go to daylight saving time? Here's President Trump on that very topic.
It's a 50-50 issue. And if something's a 50-50 issue, it's hard to get excited about it. I assume people would like to have more light later, but some people want to have more light earlier because they don't want to take their kids to school in the dark.
So,
I mean, that's why they did it in the first place.
I did the math on this, and I'm not a big fan of having the sunset, I guess there's one sun here for our planet, too early in the summer. I like it when the sun sets, closer to 9 o'clock, and that would not, if we would stay and we would not spring forward,
it's going to get
dark. That's going to get dark early.
Even in June.
Do we work on solving this problem, or are we just never going to fix it, and we're going back and forth, and we're going to bitch and complain about this forever?
I think we let go.
I don't think it's going to change. It's a 50-50 issue.
Right.
So you're going to tick off half the people no matter
what.
But
I do hate the spring forward. It takes me about 2 weeks to get out of the fog. I don't know why that
hour. But if we could just spring backwards twice a year, that would be even better.
Eventually it would be really good. But I love the fall.
Earlier.
The fall back.
I'm telling you, if you go to sleep when it gets dark and get up when it gets light, your life will... be great.
I think I'm with Gene on that one. All right, and then there's one more story that I wanted to get to because it's developing this afternoon. I think we all have curiosity. I think we might all include ourselves in big fans of Gene Hackman. There's developing news on this today. And, you know, a lot of people wanted to put conspiracies together with this. This is what they say now after the autopsy, that Gene Hackman died from heart disease at his home about a week after his wife, Betsy Arakawa, died from the effects of hantavirus, which causes a respiratory illness and is associated with rodent droppings. So they say that Alzheimer's was a contributing factor to Mr. Hackman's death. He was found on the floor of the mudroom of his home a couple of weeks ago. Ms. Arakawa was found on the bathroom floor beside a counter with pills scattered about. They were not discovered until 8 days after Mr. Hackman's pacemaker indicated that he had died. Of course, there was also the report, Sue, we were very sad about this, that one of the dogs was found dead in a crate not far from her body, which makes sense because they think that she basically, he had died and then she,
Wait,
well,
I,
no, that she had died.
She
and then
died, yeah.
he might not have had the ability to do anything
the
about
poor
it.
Poor dog, I guess. Dehydration.
Oh,
and
horrible.
The pills that were found near, because obviously people were wondering, was it somehow a suicide involved? But the pills were thyroid medication. They were not associated with her death. She was seen on surveillance video on the 11th of February at a pharmacy, returned home that evening, and her email communication ceased after that day. They say that based on the circumstances, it's reasonable to conclude that Ms. Hackman passed away first, with February 11th being the last time that she was known to be alive. Mr. Hackman then likely died on February 18th based on the last activity from his pacemaker.
Oh,
so it's a sad story, but some answers that have come in here this afternoon.
There were some crazy conspiracy theories about
that. There always are.
Well, this is a kind of a weird circumstance.
It is weird.
I mean... You know, I can see where people are like, this is not a normal thing. But he probably couldn't really much take care of himself after she passed away. And That's just sad.
It is. Steve Butts, thank you for swinging by here in the city of St. Louis. This is not your district, though, right?
No, but I love this part of the town, and this is really a great, historic
beautiful
church.
So
come down to this Serbian Orthodox.
It's a great
church.
Room. There's it been is. A lot of weddings here, and I think I've been here, actually, really cool. for a wedding sure. reception. The bar is open, by the
Serbian
way, if you want to come
beer.
Down. The food
yeah.
probably
we drank
about...
Serbian beer before the show. 5 o'clock somewhere.
The food probably may be 45 minutes away, but people are going to start filling the room, and we're going to be here until 6 o'clock. Gene Evans, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Good to see
awesome
you.
To have you
Thank
on you. The show. Jane is going to hang out here for a little bit. We always have some people that want to come by and heckle you and meet you
they
as well.
They love me,
Jane.
Though.
I don't know so, why you have to say heckle.
Well, because I'm encouraging it, Sue. Okay. That's I'm not right. just suggesting it. I'm encouraging it. Are you kidding
you
me? There's a plan. Yeah. There's not. Yeah. These things don't happen by accident. But we will have the next couple hours. Paul Hall will be here. I don't know what you're watching right now, Gene. Jane.
Oh,
I haven't lots. Really picked up on much this week, but Paul will be here. He'll also have a question about maybe our favorite Gene Hackman movie, because we didn't really talk about that last week. Cusimano will be here. Steve, big game for SLU tomorrow, right? They're getting closer to their tournament.
They are.
And they're
kind of peaking at the right time, so let's hope number 21 has a big
game. Your Tide didn't do too well the other night, nor did my Tigers.
No. So, but you know what, though? Look, it's the SEC tournament. It's all good.
You know what was interesting today on the sports front, too? I shared this with my friends Joe Arnold and Scott Jennings this morning. This was very encouraging that I saw. Through their first 9 spring games, the Cardinals had 50 hits and ranked 30th with an average of 184 and a .297 on-base percentage and a .316 slugging percentage. That sounds promising, doesn't it?
Weren't we ranked the team that did the worst over the break?
Well,
like we had the worst offseason.
You wouldn't care that much, except that was our problem last year.
I think it was accurate. All right, we're going to wrap up our first hour here from Fish Fest at the Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church in Soulard. We'll come back. Dave Murray with a spring forecast that's pretty crazy coming up after the top of the hour. And then we got Sue's News.
Get more at 971talk.com.